I'm Ricky.
I'm Giovanna. This is From Bumps to Birth,
a safe space created for everyday people to come and share their unique stories to parenthood. So sit back, relax, and enjoy. What's up, guys? Welcome back to the podcast. This is a really exciting day because it is the first episode that I have my new co-host here with me, Giovanna. So without further ado, Giovanna, thank you so much for being here today. I'm so excited for our first episode together.
I'm so excited to be here. Thanks for having me. My guest today is Nicole, and Nicole is a friend of mine, and her children are very near and dear to my heart, and I thank her so much for coming onto the podcast to share the story of her first child, Vivi. Nicole, if you want to go ahead and jump in and tell us a little bit about yourself.
Hi, I'm Nicole. I am a mother of two, a little boy and a little girl. My only daughter is Vivi. She is 3 years old, a little spitfire. I love her so much. And I believe she is who we are talking about today.
So, Nicole, if you want to go ahead and share us a little bit about when you conceived Vivi and how that process was for you.
Yeah, so conceiving Vivi for me was very much planned. I do have MS, so the medication that I was on for that at the time was not one that I could take when I was pregnant, so I had to switch. So there was a lot of planning involved, like going to see my MS doctor, getting on a medication that was safe for me and the baby when I was pregnant. And then, you know, going about trying to have a baby after that. So in February of 2018 is when we started trying. In April, I got a positive pregnancy test. And then probably about a week later, started my period. So early loss there, which was kind of hard on me. And we just kept pushing along, I guess. And then we went on our honeymoon and ended up getting pregnant that September. It was very exciting. That was how we went about conceiving, I guess. Very planned, felt like a very long road, although I know a lot of people have longer roads, but.
Definitely a long road, no matter how short or long it is for somebody when you're trying. So do you want to tell us a little bit about how your pregnancy was, especially with having MS or any complications that you may have had with like your medication and trying and with your pregnancy or anything like that? Have you had any?
Honestly, the MS, so MS gets better when you're pregnant. And if you do have, you know, active symptoms, because your immune system is different when you're pregnant. So they say that, you know, it's actually protecting against the MS to be pregnant. Ever since starting medication, I really haven't had any active symptoms anyway. So I didn't feel like it affected me at all. The only thing that was different for me was I had to go see maternal fetal medicine probably when I was like 10 weeks along for another ultrasound, and just to make sure that they didn't think that I needed to be seen by a specialist throughout the pregnancy. But I didn't, and I got to go back to my midwives and just stay with them throughout. And they were super, super caring. They did, all of them seemed to do a lot of research, because I would come in and they would be like, well, we looked into this with MS or the, you know, and it seems like you're going to do better with it. And they just kept a close eye on me and were very sweet about the whole thing and made sure that I was good, which I was. Honestly, I mean, I had really bad morning sickness with her. She made me awfully sick. And I'm trying to remember like early symptoms. It was really just a lot of morning sickness. I had a lot of food aversions. I could not even look at a piece of chicken without wanting to hurl all over the place. It was terrible. And if I did eat chicken, it had to be super dry because I just couldn't do it. It was wild. She, once she was bigger, lived like underneath my rib cage. It was so painful. But pregnancy, it wasn't the worst for me. I actually kind of enjoyed it with her. Yeah. I'm trying to think of if there was any other weirdness with it, but it, yeah, MS didn't really affect me that much with pregnancy.
Well, that's good. I had no idea that with someone who has MS, if they have active symptoms, that actually being pregnant is helpful for that. So that's really interesting. Definitely something that I need to do research on now because I'm a research nerd.
I'm the same. I was like, oh wow, that's a really interesting piece of information because that was something that I didn't know either. But I also wanted to ask you, Nicole, to can you kind of tell our listeners a little bit? I'm not, I know of MS, but I don't know exactly what it is. So do you want to kind of just share with the folks that are like me, who may not be familiar with, kind of give a rundown of what that all entails?
Ooh, now you're gonna get my knowledge here, I guess. What little I have. I should know more, honestly. It should be easy for me to be like, why, yes, this is what I have. But MS is an autoimmune disorder that basically attacks the brain. You get I think it's sclera is what it's called. I probably sound so silly right now. I have no idea. But it basically is like plaque in the parts of the brain. When you get an MRI, it lights up like a Christmas tree from what I'm told. And it like the first time when I was actually diagnosed with it, I had double vision because one of the nerves in my brain was causing one of my eyes to look inward, towards my nose. And I had weakness in one of my legs. When I actually started medication, I went in because half of my face was paralyzed, which was really fun. My husband called me Elvis because my lip wouldn't move.
Oh no.
It's pretty awful, but the medication for me has been really great, even changing. I was originally on a medication that was like a pill that I would take daily, and then after switching to my other medication, my doctor was like, yeah, this is probably better because that one can hurt your liver. And I was like, neat, you probably should have told me that when I started it. But now I'm on an injection 3 times a week, and yeah, it keeps me from looking crazy to other people.
So, do you want to share with us a little bit about your desired preferences or your idea, for the kind of birth that you wanted to have?
So, as far as a birth plan was concerned, I went in, and the nurse had initially asked me, "Did you come with a birth plan?" And I said, "Yes, my plan is to give birth." Like, I was so. The only thing that I did not want, and not because I'm some sort of, I want to feel the pain of birth person, but like I didn't want an epidural. And it's silly, but like the reasoning behind it was that I do have MS and I do know what it's like to not have my legs work under my own power. So I wasn't there for it. Also, I don't like needles. So that was really my only plan was avoid epidural if I can. I was all for pain meds, just not that particular form. And I think honestly, the nurse was like, I appreciate that I mean, my problem was is that I love people that come up with a whole birth plan. I just didn't want to go into it with a plan that I couldn't control the execution of entirely, and I didn't want to walk away from it being like, oh, man, I wish that thing had gone differently. So I figured if I went into it with the expectation of just having a baby, in the end, I win because I had a baby.
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah, it was nice to go into it just with that mindset because, yeah, at the end of the day, I had, a beautiful daughter, and I was, a little que sera sera about it, I guess, but it was, I was induced with her. So I went in for my last appointment on my 30th birthday on June 26th. And the doctor or the midwife was like, okay, well, let's check you, see how far along you were. And now I was giving birth at St. Luke's and I live in Emmett, so it's about a 45-minute drive. And one of my big fears was that I was going to go into labor, not exactly realize, and like give birth on Highway 16, which was not what I wanted to do. So I was kind of telling her, I was like, I'm a little bit paranoid at this point because I haven't had any like what I felt like real contractions should be. I would have tightening and I was like, I feel like it's Braxton Hicks. I don't know. So she's like, okay, cool. Let's check and see where you're at. So she did, she checked me and she's like, you're pretty much at like 4 centimeters. And I was like, okay, so what do we do now? And she's like, well, we can induce you today. And I was like, no, I have pizza and cake at home. I do not want to do that. So she's like, okay, cool. Maybe tomorrow then, if we can get you in. I'm like, all right, let's do that. So they scheduled me for induction the next morning. She said that I needed to be at the hospital like 7:30 in the morning unless they called me, because I was a voluntary induction. If there was anybody else that came in throughout the night, they would take first priority. So I did get a call at like 6 o'clock in the morning telling me that they had too many people show up, and if things went well, they would give me a call later in the morning and I could come and see them. And I was devastated because I was pretty pumped to get her out of me. Because, like I said, well, she did live up inside my rib cage until I dropped the week before. And then she just was pounding down on my hips. Because when she checked me at my last appointment, she's like, I feel hair. And I was like, weird, cool. She's like, yeah, no, she's really low. I'm like, okay. So I did end up getting a call at like, it was around 10:30 in the morning, probably, telling me, all right, we've gotten some people. We've had a couple women give birth. You can come in if you still want to today. And I was like, yes, please let me come in. I will be there in an hour. So my husband and I came home, we grabbed our bags, drove to the hospital, probably got there around, I don't know, 11:30-ish, because he had to stop for a sandwich, as one does. And they got me all checked into a room. It was maybe closer to like 12, 12:30 before they, checked me again, got me all hooked up to IVs, called in the midwife, and the student midwife was actually in there for my entire birth. Her name was Vanessa. She was very sweet, but she's the one that I say broke my water, but they broke the sac and Vivi was so low that there was no water. And the midwife was like, well, get ready for a shower after that baby comes out. And I was like, gross, that's disgusting. So they broke my water. And when they checked me, they were like, yeah, you're probably at about a five. And I'm like, okay, see, there's like a centimeter in the night and I don't know. I still haven't really felt like a contraction. I probably would have given birth on the highway. So they brought in one of the big bouncy balls and they're like, this will help the pain. And I'm like, cool. It did not help my pain. I am not, I firmly against the exercise balls. It was not for me. I wanted to just sit in the bed and not move. And they kept asking me if I wanted to go for walks, and I'm like, I cannot move. My back labor was so bad. It was absolutely horrendous with both of my children, but truly, I had not expected all of the pain to be in my lower back with Vivi. So I was laying in the bed. Actually, I was sitting in the bed cross-legged, and all of a sudden they were like telling me that, I needed to lay down and get on my side. Apparently, either they couldn't find her on the monitor or her heart had dropped a little bit, her heart rate. I'm not sure because I was kind of in my own little world. But I'm like, I can't move. You guys are going to have to move me. Best of luck to you. So they positioned me however they wanted to. And my mom had shown up. She was there for the birth, my husband, and then my husband's parents were there. My mother-in-law ended up staying in the room too. That was also, I guess, one of the other things that I wanted for my birth plan was I really just wanted it to be me and my husband in the room. But once I was in pain, I wanted my mommy. So I asked her to stay. And then, my mother-in-law asked nicely if she could be there. And by then I was like, I don't care who's in here. Like, I don't care. They kind of talked to me about what my other pain med options were if I really got to that point. I was like, okay, well, we'll cross that bridge when we get there. I was still at a point where I felt like I could handle it. As long as they didn't make me move too far. I basically just labored in that bed the whole time. And then by like 4:30, I had decided that I could not take it anymore and I really wanted pain meds. And they were going to do fentanyl, but they could only do that if I was below what, an 8 centimeters, I think. And I was like, okay, go ahead and check it out. I'm kind of curious what's happening anyway, because it feels like it's been forever. So they went to check, and then all of a sudden there was a flurry of activity. And they said, okay, you're at 9.5. If you push a couple times, chances are you'll be at a 10. And I was like, oh, so we're going to rock and roll with nothing. All right, let's do this. So they pulled all the stuff out. I said, we're having a baby. Let's hunker down. I remember joking a lot during this point because the way that I deal with my panic is humor. Because, laugh or cry. And the other thing I really remember during pushing is my mother-in-law, she made a comment at one point about how I was being very quiet and she was worried about me. And I was like, I am just breathing through this and in my own little world. Don't touch me. Don't talk to me. Just leave me alone. And then at one point, she called my daughter Viviana, which is not her name. And I yelled, her name is Viviana. And my mom was like, oh, dang. This baby's about to be born. We need to learn her name, dang it. So I probably pushed, I think they said for about an hour. Viv's hand was up by her face. So getting her head out was a really fun time for me, and the ring of fire is real. And I kept just telling my husband, I'm like, I just feel so dry. They like, if I could just get some moisture, I feel like she would slide on out of there. And he's like, nothing is dry. I don't know what you're talking about. And I'm like, but it feels dry. You don't understand. And he's like, I don't know. It's not. But yeah, I mean, boy, once that head comes out, this is just slippery after that, right? Like, so once her head was finally out of the way and she came out, the midwife, the student midwife caught her and got a nice bath of amniotic fluid. So I was, they broke my water around 12:30 and she was born at 5:45 p.m. Beautiful 7 pounds, 5 ounces, and 21 inches long. She was beautiful. We fell in love instantly. Although my husband does say that he thought her eyes were like not perfectly aligned. And I was like, really? That's what you notice when your daughter is born? Okay. The student midwife, I think he had made a mention to the midwife and she was like, she was sitting down in a pelvis for a while. Give her a second. She'll even out. I remember the first thing I said when she was born was, holy cow, her feet are huge. She had the longest, skinniest feet. It's wild. She was apparently a goofy-eyed, long-footed little babe, but we loved her so much. Still do.
Wow, I just gotta say, I am very impressed with you having such a short labor, especially being a first-time mom. Even with like the most favorable cervixes and stuff, usually a first time mom with an induction is not like a 5.5 hour labor. So I am truly impressed and envious of your quick labor. That's for sure.
And I had heard horror stories about that kind of stuff. And my mom had really quick labors with all of us too. So I don't know. I must come by it naturally, I guess. I didn't feel short at the time. And an hour's worth of pushing felt like an actual eternity, but it was all right. Yeah. And then as far as like, so they had me get up after I had birthed her, to kind of get cleaned up, and they wanted me to pee. And they're trying to wrap like a, you know, a blanket or something around me. And I was like, you all have been staring at me for hours now. This is the moment that you want me to cover up. And they're like, well, you know, modesty. I'm like, modesty? You just watched an entire human come out of me. I think we're all BFFs at this point. I don't know. But they wanted me to pee. I could not. My body was like, no, thank you. I do not. Actually, I guess this was after being stitched up too. So it took them a while to stitch me. I never did get a count on how many stitches I got, but I guess I had a pretty, pretty gnarly tear in one spot and a smaller one somewhere else. I never took stock of what was happening. I figured it was a train wreck down there. So I kind of just, I did my best to avoid my hoo-ha for a while there. So yeah, after they stitched me up, then they made me get up, and I was like, you truly have been staring at everything. I don't know what I'm hiding from at this point. Couldn't pee. I'm sure my body was like, no, that sounds painful. Let's not do that. And then they kept telling me, well, you're gonna have to get a catheter if you can't. And I was like, I don't know if you're gonna get me to do this, but I'll try for you. I'll do it for you. I never did. They had to cath me, which they're like, it's going to hurt, which I'm like, I just pushed a whole human from my body with no pain meds. So I think I'm good. But after that, I was fine after, you know, cause I'd been holding my bladder since 10:30, 11 o'clock that day. Yeah, and we opted to stay in the hospital for 2 days because my insurance would cover it, is what I was told. Also, we were trying to breastfeed with her. She had trouble. She would pull her tongue back instead of push it forward. And so she wasn't really latching properly, is what the lactation person had told me. So for 2 days, we tried really, really hard, and she just wouldn't latch. And there was this awful nurse that was there at night who would just like grab my boob and shove it in her poor little face in the most awkward way possible. It was absolutely awful. And nobody ever came to me and said, well, maybe, you know, maybe just formula if it doesn't work, question mark. And then they just kept insisting that I needed to, you know, they never said I needed to breastfeed, but it's kind of what it felt like to me and my husband when we talked about it later. But we left the hospital having, we did end up feeding her a bottle right before we left. We had a lactation consultant come in, and she was like, you know, you seem really stressed about this. And I was like, well, she hasn't eaten since she came out. And in my head, I'm like, I'm failing you right now, and you're probably starving, and I feel so bad. And she's like, do you just want to feed her a little bit? Like, I can get you a bottle, and we can feed her, and maybe that'll help your mommy heart a little bit if we just do that. You can still breastfeed her. It's not going to ruin anything. And I was like, thank you. Thank you for being the one person that, like, told me it's okay. It's okay to just feed your child, no matter how you have to do it. Like, that was something that I genuinely needed to hear. And the fact that only one person at the very, like, the Hail Mary moment before I left the hospital was like, it's okay. I don't know. That was really hard on me. And then going home and just, like, I had a breakdown where I was like, you were probably so hungry, which I know that, like, a newborn baby doesn't actually need that much food. But in my head, I'm like, I'm so sorry. I starved you for 2 days. You were so used to just getting your food and not having to worry about it, and then you were starving. I'm sorry. We did end up just formula feeding her, which was it was kind of nice because then my husband could get up and feed her too, which was a talk we had to have a few times where I was like, I genuinely need your help because I truly need to sleep at some point. I did try to pump briefly, but that didn't feel like it was working for me either. I think I was just so stressed and just so anxious about like feeling like I have boobs, I should be feeding you with them. And it was just stressing me out so bad that I think I was just, I don't know. It wasn't good for my mental health. Let's just say it that way, I guess. I also really struggled with feeling really alone, but like I couldn't ask the people that I knew would help me for the help that I probably needed, even if it was just like, please come over and help me clean my house. I don't like other people cleaning my house, even if I probably needed the help with it. Because with the stitches and it probably it just being my first baby, I felt like I was sitting and walking with a brick between my legs for a week and a half, 2 weeks. So I was super uncomfortable. I didn't really want to move around a whole lot. I don't know if it was the back labor or just like laboring in general. You guys can let me know, I guess, if you also have had this problem, but like my lower back would get spasms every once in a while when I picked her up, which seems silly because she was only 7 pounds. Like, why would I be having spasms? But so yeah, I didn't really want to move around a whole lot, and I don't know. I felt really alone and really like I wanted help but didn't want to ask for it, if that makes sense.
Oh, absolutely. I think that there is such an expectation, especially like here in the US. We live such like fast-paced lives. And we have, even not in the US, but all over the world, social media is like a huge influence to everybody, even when we don't realize it at the time. You know, we see all these content creators who show these like picture perfect transitions with their babies and stuff like that. And sometimes maybe they are, but realistically, like even me as a mom of I've brought 6 children home, and each time it still, even though it was relatively smooth, it still took some time to develop, you know, routines and get my head and my body back to where it was before having the baby. And I think another thing is that we view asking for help as a sign of weakness because we want these babies and we think that, you know, we have high expectations for ourselves, like we're going to be these amazing mothers, which we are. But we just have it like put in our brain. I think society plays a big role on that with their expectations, unrealistic expectations, that it is a sign of weakness to ask for help. And it's simply just not the case. Everybody needs help sometimes, no matter what. And I think it's actually very healthy for you to get the help when you need it instead of suffering through it and potentially causing yourself more harm, in the long run.
I completely agree with that. There's this wonderful book. It's called The First 40 Days, and it's talking about that fourth trimester of like nurturing your body so you're able to nurture your baby and really just resting for those first 40 days after birth. And like Ricky had said, like in the US, it's so like you just had a baby and you're walking out of the hospital and you should be able to just like go home and take care of your family and take care of your children and your house and all the things and you know, be able to master it all just leaving from the hospital. That's like the mindset, and it should not be that way.
Yeah, I agree because you go home and you have this tiny creature. I just remember after giving birth, I was like, well, now what do we do with her? Like, I mean, I know we like feed her and keep her alive and like change her diaper and stuff, but What do we do? Like, you don't, I don't know. I should have given myself more grace to figure things out, as opposed to just being like, I'm gonna know everything. And I'm looking back now after having my second kid, I was like, yeah, that was hard. It's still hard. And I mean, I took 3 months off work, I think is about what I ended up with. It was really nice. I worked for a company at the time that by all means was not super great, but I did have a supervisor that was very, forgiving of the fact that I needed extra time at home with her to just acclimate, and to get back into the mindset of going back to work. So I was able in the end to take a decent amount of time away from my office to get to know her, to let her get to know me, to kind of understand, what it was to take care of her, to heal myself. I mean, to let my train wreck of a body become the new normal-ish, I guess. So it was really nice. It was nice to have that time. But yeah, I think another one of my big problems in postpartum was that I was really good at just smiling and nodding and being like, yeah, no, I'm fine. This is great. Even at like doctor's appointments, I probably should have been more real with more people and been like, no, I'm actually pretty sad. It's like, this is hard. Because I probably did have some postpartum depression that I just smiled my way through and was like, no, I'm good. No, that's not a tear rolling down my cheek. I'm fine. I think, in hindsight, just I would be a lot more open and honest about how I was feeling and how I was doing, because I think it would have helped me a lot in the end to not just push through and pretend like I was fine and I was, coping.
I think that that's a really common thing that women do, Nicole. To just like, or even like not even recognize it being as like postpartum depression or anxiety, but even just baby blues. They're like, oh, they're just baby blues, and they've lasted 6 or 8 weeks or 12 weeks. But just a little bit of education for our audience, especially like first-time moms who don't know what to expect. When you're in your postpartum period, your first 2 weeks or so, it's your hormones are just like way all over the place, especially, and so you tend to have the baby blues and feeling a little sad. But if it continues on longer than like that 2 week period, and it goes on, 4 weeks, 6 weeks, 8 weeks, even for women, it can even like the postpartum mood disorders and stuff can even go up through like 5 years postpartum. So it's not only always just immediately postpartum. It could be 6 months, 8 months, a year, 2 years that those kinds of things pop up. But it's just really recognizing that if your baby blues tend to be ha lasting longer than 2 weeks, it's probably a pretty good indication that it is more postpartum depression or anxiety. And there's nothing wrong with talking to your doctor or your family about how you're feeling and to help, work through those emotions that you're having. So, I think that that's, I felt that same way with Kinley. Not so much Eli. I didn't really have postpartum depression with Elijah, but with Kinley, I think I had a little bit, but I was just kept telling myself that I was fine. And then when I had Kimber, I was able to recognize that much sooner and talk to my doctor about it. But it's definitely one of those things where like, no, I'm fine. I'm fine. I'm fine. It's okay. I'm fine. So I just wanted to give a little education there for our audience.
I feel like a lot of women dismiss their feelings because sometimes, I mean, there's such a wide range of emotions and like severity of the postpartum depression and anxiety and such, that if even if a woman is just having like mild type of symptoms, they kind of just that's where they kind of get to the point where they're, I'm fine, you know, and they hear, like, they've heard other stories where women are just like completely, like they can disconnect from their babies, that they hear like the more severe cases, which I say that very lightly because I feel like every, I don't want to downplay anybody's situation, you know what I mean? But I think that's where a lot of us, as a woman myself, my first pregnancies, just dealing with, you know, I definitely had baby blues, which would always, I remember they were so bad. And I would think there's no way these are going to go away by, you know, 2 weeks or so. And usually they did. I look back now on some of the pregnancies, and I didn't reach out because I didn't feel like I was, my symptoms were severe enough, or I just felt like I was overreacting, which are all common things with women who deal with postpartum depression or anxiety. So I think, you know, just trying to normalize.
So Nicole, when you were talking about in your story, and in the hospital, when you were having a really hard time with nursing and Vivi was really having a hard time with it and you're struggling and just really stressed out to the max, and you had said something that was so powerful, and that was when the nurse or the lactation consultant came in and was like, you know, mama, you're a little stressed. Let's give her a bottle. It's okay to feed her a bottle of formula and get something in her belly and take a little bit of that stress off of your mama heart. And I just want to share, I just want to say, like, that's super powerful because there's so much pressure on moms to breastfeed their babies. Like, breast is best or breast is the only way. And that's simply not true. And there's simply reasons why we have things like formula for our babies to feed them. So I really appreciated you sharing your experience with that. And I think that if moms are having those issues in the hospital or at home or whatever it may be, just knowing that it's okay to feed your baby formula. So I just wanted to touch on that as well. So
yeah, and I feel like it was so important for somebody just to say it was okay, because everybody else made me feel like it was not okay, that things weren't going well. And nobody gave me the option, and I didn't feel comfortable piping up saying, you know, maybe we just feed her. So it was so comforting to just have one person say, you know, let's just feed the kid. One way or another, she needs some food.
Yeah.
So, you know, medical professionals in the world need to know that, you know, it's, they also need to be able to verbalize it's okay. Like, and I think it's important for moms to have the courage to stand up and just, you know, it's not working right this moment. Perhaps later on it will work. And I think that my experience in the hospital really discouraged me from further pursuing breastfeeding with her too. It made me feel so discouraged, and like it wasn't working. And so, you know, it just, you know, path of least resistance. Once we were home, I was like, well, nobody can tell me no now. She gets formula. Let's do this.
You know, and knowing you and knowing Vivi and this, that little spitfire little girl that she is, there's not any indication in this world that would ever make you think that she was bottle fed or breastfed or any other difference. She's smart, very intelligent, tells you what's on her mind, and just one of the most loving children I have ever come across.
Oh, you're so sweet.
Did you have anything else that you wanted to share with us before we sign off here this evening?
I don't think so.
Well, I appreciate you coming on and sharing your story of Viviana with us. And really look forward to hearing your second child's birth in the future. So, and his journey and pregnancy and postpartum and all the things. So, Ricky, did you have anything else that you wanted to add?
I just am very grateful that you took the time to share your story with us. You had a lot of really interesting points, which I always am so eager to share and discover for myself and for so many other people out there. And so, I love you dearly for it. I don't even know you, and I love you and respect the heck out of you. So thank you so much for coming on the podcast. And thank you for being the first person while Javon and I kind of navigate our way through this journey of being co-hosts together. It's kind of a learning curve for us, but we're really excited.
Thank you, Nicole.
Thank you, ladies, so much for having me.
Hey friends, this concludes today's episode, but be sure to catch up on all of our past episodes on your favorite podcast platform. If you or someone you know are interested in sharing your story, we would love to hear from you. You can find us on Instagram, From Bumps to Birth, or you can message me personally, Ricky Hamley, on Facebook or Instagram. Your love and support mean so much to me. So, my fellow birth geeks, until next time.